Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on this morning's magazine, the 120-year-old Chautauqua Park area in Boulder is a National Historic Landmark. But public versus private use of the historic property is at the centre of a new lawsuit. We'll have more coming up after headlines. After that, we'll hear how Colorado lawmakers are taking on hairstyle discrimination with a new law that'll get its first hearing later today. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You, followed by Naturally with Brigitte Mars, will take us to the bottom of the hour. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we'll hear a talk given recently by David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, in which he addresses what's happening with Iran. It was recorded in the last few weeks in Golden, Colorado. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Yesterday, an anti-fracking group submitted a complaint with the state seeking penalties against oil and gas companies for their failure to file reports and pay taxes. Colorado Rising Communities, a sister organization of Colorado Rising, is asking the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to require complete reporting by operators and the imposition of fines. The complaint comes after the state auditor released a 76-page report last week that found more than 300 of the state's 420 fossil fuel developers failed to submit about 50,000 required monthly well reports. According to the Colorado Independent, these reports are used by the state to confirm that companies paid the correct amount of taxes. The audit, covering 2016 through 2018, detailed one company that underreported its oil and gas production and potentially avoided more than $2.5 million in severance taxes before adjustments. The auditor's report was requested by state lawmakers as part of Senate Bill 181 that became law last year. In a statement, Joe Salazar, executive director of Colorado Rising, said that it was disgusting to learn about the amount of violations, and his organization is demanding that the COGCC live up to its statutory responsibilities. Jeff Robbins, the new director of the agency, said that he was not aware of the issue until the audit was underway and that they will ensure full compliance as they move forward. A committee of the legislature has killed a bill that would have allowed local governments to pass their own laws regarding single-use plastic. The measure would have repealed an existing law that prevents cities and counties from regulating plastics. And it had been proposed by Colorado Communities for Climate Action, representing 32 cities, towns, and counties across the state. Telluride Mayor Delaney Young told the Denver Post that the killing of the bill was extremely disappointing and that her community has been waiting since January of last year for legislators to take action on the outdated law. Some opponents to the measure argued that it would lead to a patchwork of different laws that would be confusing. Also at the legislature, sponsors of a statewide family and medical leave program have agreed to change their proposal considerably. The Denver Post reports that the compromise measure would not provide paid leave through a state-run insurance company. While it would still require that all employers provide paid family leave to their workers, companies would be allowed to do this through private insurance. The amendment is seen as a win for business and Governor Jared Polis, who have both resisted a purely state-run program. Lobbyists in the governor's office strongly resisted specifics of the earlier measure as introduced. A high school basketball team in southern Colorado is drawing attention to Native American women who have gone missing or were killed. Each coach and player on the Ignacio girls varsity team were pictured in December with red or black handprints painted over their mouths extending to their cheekbones. The Durango Herald reports that the team in southwestern Colorado was showing solidarity for the movement known as Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. According to the Urban Indian Health Institute, there were nearly 6,000 cases of missing and murdered indigenous women and girls reported in 2016, but only 116 were entered into the U.S. Department of Justice database. The red handprint on the young women's faces is symbolic and has been used by Native American athletes in both the Pacific Northwest and the Dakotas. In Native culture, red is the only color that spirits can see, and by painting over their mouths, the young women give voice to those who are gone, as well as to the athletes. Most of the members of the varsity team are Southern Ute tribal members. CU Boulder may have to scrap plans to build student, faculty, and staff housing on its undeveloped South Campus. The Daily Camera reports that CU leaders formalized their doubts about the housing plan in a letter sent to Mayor Sam Weaver and Councilmember Rachel Friend in January. The university wants to annex more than 300 acres into Boulder and agree to give 80 to the city for flood mitigation. The property is south of US 36 and Foothills Parkway. The city is looking at an option that would create a dam and reservoir for the edge of the property to Table Mesa. A representative of CU said in a letter that the proposed dam would effectively sever the developable portion of the property from the community. Councilmember Friend said she was not surprised by the letter and is happy to have the clarification because they need to stop moving the goalposts on the project and have everyone on the same page. Last night, the council discussed the years-long flood mitigation project. The forecast for today shows sunny skies with a high of 30 and an overnight low of 15. Tomorrow, there's a chance of snow with cloudy skies and a high of 43. Snow is likely tomorrow night and Friday. Right now, it's about 7 degrees outside. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. A dispute over governance of Boulder's historic Chautauqua property spilled into the courts on Tuesday. KGNU's Ros Brown says Boulder City Council was provided with an update during last night's meeting.
At the heart of the Chautauqua conflict is an outdated governance structure that is easily manipulated. The current Colorado Chautauqua Association bylaws allow people who want a larger say in how things are done there to pay a little more. For example, with Chautauqua memberships going for $25 each, you could shell out $1,000, which would buy you 40 memberships, each of which carries a vote in the election of directors. Nan Anderson, president of the Colorado Chautauqua Association, told City Council special interest groups currently exert control over the organization at the expense of the broader public.
So what happens when vote buying elevates special interests to board seats? In my 4 years on Chautauqua's board, I've witnessed exactly what happens. Cottagers with special interests ask us to set aside $50,000 for lowering lodging rates and tell us that our loyalty discount program just isn't good enough. Without ever letting up on this drumbeat, they continue to recommend that if we just stop rehabilitating our cottages and laid off some staff, we could pay for these special perks. These special interests are disruptive, destructive, and often handcuff the good work that the board and staff do.
Boulder Chautauqua on West Baseline is home to 99 cottages, an auditorium, and dining hall surrounded by open space. The association owns 61 of the cottages, which are leased to visitors, while 38 belong to private owners. Boulder City Attorney Tom Carr.
But that's one of the things that's always scared us, that the cottagers would treat Chautauqua as their private homeowners association. It's not. It's a multifaceted place that benefits a wide range of stakeholders, and it's very important in our community. And while I agree that cottagers play an important role, I'm not sure they play as an important role as the way it provides open space to our whole community. They are one stakeholder. The other stakeholders are the open space users, the community around it, the people who go to concerts, the people who get married there. There's so many people who benefit. With 600,000 visitors a year, to have 39 homeowners telling us what to do is really troubling.
Last year, Carr informed the Chautauqua Association it would be in breach of its lease agreement with the city if governance issues weren't fixed. An election to change the bylaws was initiated and continues for the 1,800 members through February 24th, but a lawsuit filed yesterday is a new wrinkle in the dispute. The lawsuit filed against both the association and the city of Boulder asks that the election be declared void. Carr told council members he feels the city is on solid ground.
We will defend. We will keep working on this. It is unfortunate. My hope is that the community as a whole sees this, allows for the amendment in the bylaws, and gets rid of a lot of this silliness that has been going on now for years and really needs to end.
For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Later today, lawmakers will convene a community meeting at the state capitol ahead of the first hearing on a piece of legislation that sponsors say will end discrimination that's based on hairstyles that specifically target people of colour, and in particular, African Americans. There have been several high-profile cases of children not being allowed to graduate, children who are being excluded from school because of their hairstyle. Well, one of the sponsors of that legislation is Representative Leslie Herod, who is a Democrat from Denver. And that legislation is the Crown Act. She says that she's heard from people who are impacted by this type of hairstyle discrimination all around the state of Colorado.
Well, for far too long, people of color have been discriminated against based on their hairstyles. We've been told to straighten our hair, to cut off our dreadlocks, to not wear braids. Definitely men, especially Native American men, Latino men, and Black men have been told that their hairstyles are too long or unkept. And it's time for that type of discrimination to stop. I believe that policing people of color's hair is another form of discrimination and racism, and it's something that we should no longer tolerate in this day and age.
You know, this is something that we're seeing happening around the country, and there really have been some high profile cases, particularly when it comes to children who are being punished by schools or excluded by schools, expelled even, for their hairstyles. And we're being told then that this natural hairstyle, that it's something to be controlled. And that's so dangerous, it seems, for children and for children of colour to be told that their natural appearance does not fit with the standards that society expects.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it does. You know, across this state and across this country, I have heard stories of young people who have been discriminated against based on their hairstyles. They've been bullied. They've been told to cut their hair. They've been kept from walking in graduations, all because of who they are. And I believe that's wrong. I mean, take, for instance, the young man in Texas. You know, he wasn't violating any part of his dress code. His hair was not on his collar. And it was, you know, tied up nice in a ponytail, had been wearing it that way for a while, and then was told he could not wear it for graduation. That's unacceptable. I mean, the funny thing is that people just think, well, if they don't like the policy, they should go somewhere else. Or why can't they just cut their hair? Well, tell me why it was brought up in the first place. Tell me why this young man was targeted. It's because he's African-American. There's no other reason. His hair didn't just pop up and become 6 inches long the week before his graduation or whatever time before his graduation. He had been growing out his locks for a while. And, you know, it's quite frankly time to stop saying that these hairstyles are unprofessional or unkept or unclean. Those are descriptions that folks have used against people with darker skin for a very long time, and it shouldn't be acceptable. For some reason, it's still acceptable in hair, and we're going to put a stop to that.
So what exactly then would the Crown Bill do?
Yes. So this bill would ban and outlaw discrimination based on ethnic hairstyles throughout Colorado in places of education, public accommodations, housing, and employment. If you can imagine, we actually have even heard stories of being discriminated against in housing because of your hair. And so what we're saying is that this is no longer a tolerated policy or practice in Colorado. And it will allow for remedies to the Civil Rights Commission and Division if there is a violation.
Representative Herod, I know that at the meeting that's happening on Wednesday, just prior to the committee hearing of the bill, you're going to have members of the community share their own stories of how they have been discriminated over their hairstyles. So is this something that you yourself have lived through? Is this something you've had experience of?
You know, let me be honest with you. As a child growing up, it was never acceptable in my house to wear my hair curly in public unless I was in all Black settings. And so for me, and I think for so many folks of my generation, it's very hard internally for us even to do that because we have had to live with these standards for so long. And so I think the impact this bill will have is it will show young people that they could be who they are and wear their hair the way they want to without the stigma and then the internalized issues that come with that. And so for me, I knew when I take my legislative photos or whatnot, I wouldn't even think to wear my hair curly. But, you know, I have long, straight hair and it didn't all grow out of my head. And I have no problem with that. So my hair is definitely what, you know, it resembles who I am and reflects who I am. But there's no reason for me to continue to try to fit someone else's standards. I should be able to be who I am, and everyone should be able to be who they are. And that's how we move forward. I am really excited also to be able to, Gabrielle Union's story really hit me pretty close to home. I follow her a lot on social media. As a young child, she was one of the only people on TV who was my complexion. She was a cheerleader in Bring It On. And so I've really, really followed her career and who she is. And to hear how she was discriminated against because her styles were too urban was something that really struck me. And that was really the impetus for me running the bill in Colorado, was what happened to her. And then all of these other stories started to come out. And again, it made it so important that we do something about it. Again, we should be able to be who we are. We should wear our hairstyles the way that we want them. We should be able to change them on a regular basis, and that be okay. And, you know, moving forward, when this bill passes, we will have the ability to say this is wrong. And if you don't abide by the law in Colorado, then we will have remedies. We will seek remedies and we will have them. And that's what we're going to do here.
When we see this type of policing of somebody's appearance by different authorities, whether it's a school, whether it's by an employer, and it's the policing of the appearance of people of colour, and particularly of African Americans, who are being told that how they look, it's not professional if you don't have your hairstyle a certain way. But that's really the imposition of white standards of beauty, of a very Eurocentric idea of what looks professional. And it's saying to certain people that if your hair isn't like this, it's somehow wrong. It's somehow deviant.
Right. I mean, those words, deviant, they're not acceptable. It's basically saying that they want you to hide your blackness as much as possible or assimilate as much as you can. And that is not something we have to do. I am proud to be a black woman. I want you to see who I am as a black woman. I don't want to live in a colorblind society, but I want to live in a world that respects me and my choices, and respects people who look like me when we walk in a room. And this will, I think, put us in that direction, or at least say that it's against the law to not do so.
Representative Leslie Herod, along with other members of the Colorado Black Caucus, in collaboration with the Crown Coalition, will host a community hearing for members of the public to share their own stories of hair discrimination. This is this afternoon at 12:30, and immediately following that meeting, there will be a committee hearing on the Crown Bill. It is 8:21. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. It's time now for Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Many are still reeling from Trump's so-called impeachment trial, you know, the one with no witnesses and no documents. In 2016, Lindsey Graham tweeted, quote, "If we nominate Trump, we will get destroyed and we will deserve it." Lawrence O'Donnell observed that 49 senators who voted for witnesses in the Senate trial of Trump represent 19 million more people than the 51 senators who voted against. More and more conservatives believe this is happening now. Bill Kristol, a leader of the neoconservative movement in the Bush era, just tweeted, "Not presumably forever, not perhaps for a day after November 3rd, not on every issue, but for the time being, one has to say we are all Democrats now." The House will continue to investigate, though, possibly subpoenaing John Bolton and Lev Parnas. The former can give firsthand testimony, and the latter, according to Parnas's attorney Joseph Bondi, has notes, emails, and receipts implicating GOP Super PAC America First and President Trump, Vice President Pence, former Energy Secretary Rick Perry, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Attorney General Bill Barr, Senator Lindsey Graham, Congressman Devin Nunes, Nunes's staffer Derek Harvey, journalist John Solomon, attorneys Joe Giovanna and Victoria Tensing, Mr. Giuliani, and others in the Ukraine scheme. Many people are contacting Senator Cory Gardner to let them know what they think of his no witness vote, and others are contacting their representatives to encourage a vigorous and ongoing investigation of this scandal. In the meantime, we in the United States are woefully unprepared for a possible coronavirus outbreak here. The Obama administration had set up a permanent epidemic monitoring and command group inside the White House National Security Council and another in the Department of Homeland Security. In 2018, the Trump administration fired the government's entire pandemic response team. Then the White House pushed Congress to cut funding for Obama-era disease security programs. The government's $30 million complex crises fund fund was eliminated. In May 2018, Trump ordered the NSC's entire global health security unit shut down. The global health section of the CDC was so drastically cut in 2018 that much of its staff was laid off. The most important federal program for local medical worker and hospital epidemic training runs out of money in May as Congress has failed to vote on its funding. The Health and Human Services Office last year requested $2.58 billion. Congress did not act. Under the Trump administration, funding for the 2018 All Hazards Preparedness and Advancing Innovation Act, which authorizes programs to develop responses to threats such as pandemics or bioterrorist attacks, was allowed to lapse for 9 months. If you want to live, or if you just have thoughts on staffing and funding of the CDC in anticipation of the possible coronavirus pandemic, you can contact your senators and congressperson. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It is 8:24. You're listening to KGNU. Coming up in just about 5 or 6 minutes' time, we'll hear a talk given recently by David Barsamian of Alternative Radio in Golden, Colorado. It's on the Iran-US deadly embrace. And we'll be going to that just after 8:30. So we'll be bringing you Jim Hightower's commentary a little bit earlier this morning in place of headlines from the BBC. Don't forget, you can subscribe to a podcast of the Morning Magazine if you'd like to listen again or listen at a different time to local headlines, stories and interviews. Just search for KGNU wherever you get your podcasts. Up next, it's Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I've been doing a series on natural remedies for passion, libido, sexuality. But there's many reasons why these foods are good for us, because sexual energy is extra energy. So if we're eating things that are super nutritious, it's going to be good for everything. So today's topic is nuts and seeds. The word nut comes from the Latin nux, meaning to nourish. And technically, all nuts are seeds. They're the reproductive part of the plant that contains the spark of life, the pattern for new growth. And many things we eat are technically seeds, grains, beans. But nuts often have a hard shell. They are much more nutritious when consumed raw, but many nuts can be difficult to digest. So soaking them overnight and rinsing them and dehydrating is something I like to do, because we know when we buy roasted nuts, we want to make sure that they're not roasted in oils. And, you know, a lot of people actually have nut allergies, and that's something we need to be aware of. Peanuts are technically not a nut, but a legume. So nuts and seeds, things like cashews, Brazil nuts, walnuts, hazelnuts, they are high in good quality fats, vitamins, carbohydrates, B vitamins, vitamin E. They can help to regulate blood sugar. They're a great source of vegan protein. And I noticed that nuts have gotten very expensive in recent years. So keep in mind that a lot of nuts that we buy that say they're raw are actually pasteurized. Almonds, for example. And I know you've probably been seeing how almonds require lots and lots of water and are contributing to demise of bee populations. So I've not been using almonds as much. I've been using more walnuts. And traditionally, walnuts are said to be good for the brain. You might even think that they look a little bit like the brain. Walnuts and pecans are both in the same family. Pecans are usually heated before they're sold, but they're all good sources of protein nonetheless. Hazelnuts are believed in British lore to be one of the reasons why Great Britain has contributed so much to the world's literature. They actually are shaped kind of like the head. So nuts and seeds are good for our teeth. They can help us feel more full. I often like to carry a few Brazil nuts with me when I travel. They will make me feel full if all I've had for a meal is salad. And enjoy them as a snack and trail mix to add extra crunch to cookies. Be aware that cashews are and pistachios are both in the poison ivy family, maybe not so great for people with skin problems. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
can hear Brigitte Mars and naturally every Wednesday morning right here at Community Radio KGNU.